Srimad Bhagavatam, 9th canto, chapter 10, entitled The Pastimes of Lord Ramachandra, text number 2. Tasyapi Bhagavane
Sasyapi
Sakshat Brahma Mayo Hari
Sakshat Brahma Mayo Hari
Asam Shena Chaturdhaga
Asam Shena Chaturdhaga
Putratvam Pratita Surai
Putratvam Pratita Surai
Rama Lakshmana Bharata
Rama Lakshmana Bharata
Satrupna Ite Sangaya
Satrupna Ite Sangaya.
Translation. Being prayed for by the demigods, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Absolute Truth Himself, directly appeared with His... with His expansion and expansions of the expansion. Their holy names were Ram, Lakshman, Bharata, and Shatrughna. These celebrated incarnation thus appeared in four forms as the son of Maharaj Dasara. Purport. Lord Ramachandra and his brothers, Lakshman, Bharata, and Shatrughna, are all Vishnu Tattva, not Jiva Tattva. The Supreme Personality of Godhead expands into many forms. Advaitam, Achyutam, Anadim, Anantarupam. Although they are one and the same, Vishnu Tattva has many forms and incarnations, as confirmed in the Brahma Samhita at 539. Rama Adimurisu, Kala Niyamena Tistan. The Lord is situated in many forms, such as Ram, Lakshman, Bharata, and Satrupa, and these forms may exist in any part of this creation. All these forms exist permanently, eternally, as individual personalities of Godhead, and they resemble many candles, all equally powerful. Lord Ramachandra, Lakshman, Bharat, and Satrughna, who being Vishnu Tattva, all equally powerful, became the sons of Maharaj Dasara in response to the prayers by the demigods. When the Supreme Lord appears in this world, then naturally all inauspiciousness disappears. Just at such a time, the entire universe is pervaded by an auspicious atmosphere. And so also the appearance day of the Lord. So today, being the appearance day of Lord Ramachandra, is an auspicious day. Even now, so many years later, almost 1 million years later, still this day is blessed by the special mercy of Lord Ramachandra. Of course, we are now just celebrating privately on Sunday. We'll celebrate it publicly. But we invoke the mercy of Lord Ramachandra by remembering Lord Ramachandra, praying to Lord Ramachandra. Srila Prabhupada pointed out that the appearance day of Lord Ramachandra is especially important. Amongst so many incarnations of the Lord, he pointed out that Lord Ramachandra is almost Krishna, practically is Krishna. The reason why he's almost Krishna is because he is performing very intricate human-like pastimes. And within these pastimes, he's expressing so many various emotions and exchanges and so on. And in that way, very close to Krishna. There is a great distinction between Lord Ramachandra and Lord Krishna in the purpose for which they came to the material world. The purpose of Lord Ramachandra was to establish the principles of Dharma and in this way teach the human being how to act perfectly according to his religious duty. Whereas Krishna came to reveal the transcendental nature of the eternal spiritual world. So whereas Lord Ramachandra was acting out the perfect part for a human being, teaching by example, Krishna was simply acting as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, in that way, sometimes breaking laws of scripture or breaking social laws. Krishna, after all, is known as a thief. Whereas Lord Ramachandra at all times was acting according to principles of Dharma. I'll begin the story somewhere in the middle, since it's a very long story. I'll begin just when Viswamrita came to Ramachandra's father, his court, and asked Dasarath for his son. Well, that was a very dramatic moment. Dasarath, who was so attached to his son, who was so pleased having this son, Ram, and also the other sons, but especially Ram, who was just so totally attached. When Viswamrita came, Viswamrita was a very powerful sage who came, and he was not the soft-spoken type. Viswamrita was outspoken and to the point. He did not come with any gentle introduction. He came immediately with the point that he had on his mind. And he just said it. So when he arrived, Dasarath said, how are you progressing in the pursuits of the eternal goal of life? Instead of saying, how are you? Then he asked him a deeper question. But Dasarath, asking this question, did not get the reply he expected. Viswamrita simply immediately got to the point and said, I want your son. So Dasarath is in a total state of shock. And anyway, he couldn't reply. Viswamrita became immediately impatient. And Viswamrita was already leaving, already walking away. So it's like then Vasishtha, who was there as the priest in the court, he ran after him and he sort of stopped him at the door and says, no, no, no. The king wants to speak. He says, Viswamrita said, there's nothing I want to talk about. Right. My purpose was not fulfilled. Right. He said, no, don't leave so quickly. Your purpose will be fulfilled. So then Viswamrita returned. And finally, Dasarath tried to say, well, I can go. I can go instead. Right. I'm very experienced. I can fight those demons. How can my son fight demons? Impossible. But Ramachandra went, and of course, he expertly fought those demons and was given celestial weapons by Viswamrita, and subsequently, Lord Ramachandra was taken to the kingdom of Mithila, where King Janak, his daughter, was just of marriageable age. It is said that when Sita saw this young man walk into the city, when her eye fell upon him immediately, she was struck, like, so much so, she became confused, she couldn't stand, her head started spinning, she almost fell over, and from that point on, her mind was fixed. She wanted him as her husband, and she was totally ill right, in separation because she had seen him and he had disappeared. She was so feverish that the maidservants didn't know what to do. They made a bed with cool flower leaves, but the flowers just withered within moments, and finally she was lying on a bed of moonstone to cool down. That's how. But nothing cooled her down. She was totally overheated. Meanwhile, somehow or other, Janak Maharaj had arranged for this impossible test, this bow of Shiva that had to be strung, and many princes had tried. It was impossible. So the whole kingdom was saying, why did he make such a difficult test? Why doesn't he forget about it and just give her to this boy? He's the perfect match. But anyway, Lord Ramachandra very easily and quickly strung the bow and then pulled the bow and pulled the string, and then the bow snapped in two halves. Sita missed the whole thing. Sita missed the whole thing because she was all the time just still overwhelmed from just seeing him. So she was not able to get up, and it was a maidservant who, instead of like coming into the room and offering obeisances, came dancing into the room and singing in great ecstasy. So like Sita sort of woke up from that and said, like, what's going on? And then, you know, the maidservant made it very clear that, like, yes, there is a great celebration, a great celebration. There is a prince who has strung the bow and broke the bow. And Sita said, if it's not the one that I saw, then I will give up my life. Anyway, it was the one, so. And then this huge marriage arrangement and so on, and a glorious visit from all the relatives, Dasarath, with his queens and everyone, a whole huge, huge entourage appeared there in Mithila, in Janakpur, the city of where Sita appeared. And then the brothers also all got married also, so everything was arranged. The whole lot got married all at once. So that was done, and that was setting the scene of what was to come, the ideal marriage, the ideal couple, destined to rule the world, just having all the good qualities, and everyone was ready. And Dasarath was ready to make arrangements to crown Ram as king. Okay, now I will not go into a huge chronological description of the whole Ramayana here, tried in summary. No, I have another approach this morning, and the approach is I go by personalities. When you are trying to describe a book, one way is just do a description of various personalities. So I want to begin with Ravana, right? Ravana was a powerful personality. Ravana had performed great austerity. Ravana, however, was not of good character, and that showed in the fact that he stole the plane that belonged to his brother Kuvira. And that plane was extraordinary. It was a huge golden plane with all kinds of wonderful arrangements, and it was very large. And the thing moved at will, so that was kind of nice, right? No need for any steering, it simply moved at will. So, Ravana was flying through the sky in that plane, accompanied by many Rakshasas who were riding on various animals and creatures. And then they were roaming the sky, in a arrogant, boasting spirit. Who could resist them? Who could fight them? Who could match them? Then they descended. They descended upon a sacrifice which was being performed by sages, and the Rakshasas just threw themselves on the sages and just ate the flesh of the sages, killed the sages, and and so on. It was quite a ghastly scene right there and then. How was this possible in previous yugas, when almost worse than the age of Kali, one might say? No, simply in previous yugas, all were more powerful. So the demons were also very powerful. And to eat a few sages on the way was not uncommon in those days. So it got outrageous. So Ravana's outrageous activities were adding up. And no one could deal with his power other than cursing him. So he was cursed by many sages. He had once joked about, made fun of the sage Astavraka, making jokes or implications that he was a monkey, that he was like a monkey, moving like a monkey, and for that he was cursed that he would be killed or defeated by monkeys. So like many curses were there upon Ravana. It is said the daughter of a great sage was Vedavati, and Vedavati had been performing austerities in the mountains, and Ravana had become attracted to her and this and that, and she refused him, and he had tried to take her by force, but she, as soon as he touched her body, she gave up her body. But just as she was doing it, she mentioned that she would reappear only to destroy him, and became Sita. So many things were there that sort of led up to Ravana's destruction. So Ravana, like that, was an extremely lusty person. But since he was cursed that if he would ever take a woman by force, that he would die. So therefore, there was this complication in his life, you see. There was this thing, this complication, that later when he kidnapped Sita, that he couldn't just take her by force. Otherwise, you know what I mean? Morality was really not what held him back, man. It was fear. It was outright fear that held him back. So, because of these curses. So, that is a little bit of an introduction of Ravana. Let us for a moment then have a look at Hanuman being such a colorful personality in the entire Ramayana. Hanuman, of course, was originally conceived in the heavenly regions, and then when his mother was a celestial lady, was somehow or other cursed to become a monkey, then Hanuman was meant to take his birth as such in this world. So when Hanuman appeared, he was immediately very powerful, very powerful. His mother, she had a curse that she had to go down from the heavenly regions to earth in a monkey form until the point that she would give birth to a child. So as soon as she's given birth, she was ready to go. But Hanuman said, no, wait. And then he grabbed her cloth and said, where are you going? She says, I'm going. My curse is over. I'm going now. He said, no, you can't go because you're my mother. And I'm hungry. Yeah. So what will I eat? Subsequently, she said, it's very easy. You just eat anything that is red and round. And then she went. So Hanuman was waiting in the night and nothing red and round in sight until in the morning the sun appeared and it was red and round. So Hanuman jumped up and flew in the sky towards the sun, and he was about to swallow the sun when Indra, just in time, interfered and with his thunderbolt hit him on the jaw. And he broke the jaw, or some say a piece of the teeth. Yeah. He still has the toothpaste, you know. Vajradanti, named after that. Good toothpaste. At least a good name. Reminding us of Hanuman. So Hanuman, after that, was extremely upset. Right? And Vayu, who was ultimately the father of Hanuman, Vayu was very upset also. So in order to deal with Vayu, who was totally outraged, all the demigods came to pacify him and gave benedictions to Hanuman. And that he would become extremely powerful. And so he became very, very powerful. And Bhrigupati gave him the knowledge of what he could eat. So everything seemed okay. But he continued to cause disturbances. So finally they cursed him that he would forget his power, but would remember it when he, in that battle, when he needed it for that battle. So in this way, a little introduction of Hanuman. Hanuman, besides his frivolous youth, later became a very learned and powerful personality. He approached the sun god to study under the sun god, but the sun god wasn't so eager since he had previous experience with him. But he finally agreed. He wouldn't let Hanuman in the chariot. So Hanuman just traveled backwards in front of the sun, facing the sun, his teacher. Yeah. So he traveled backward through the sky in front of the sun, hearing. In the sun has a chariot full with various sages. I mean, I think 64, but boy, these things can be many more. Whatever. And these sages are very learned, so in this way, very interesting discussions, and Hanuman became very learned. We see that when, after Sita had been kidnapped and taken away by Ravana through the sky, and Ram and Lakshman were searching for Sita in the south, at one point they met Hanuman. And Hanuman had power, mystic power, and was able to take a human-like form. When Hanuman took this human-like form, at that point he approached Lord Ramachandra and Lakshman. And it said Hanuman, he did not just only speak the proper words, but he even spoke on a proper note. Yeah. So the Vedic literature is even giving a certain note that one should have when one addresses someone respectfully. So Hanuman had the proper note, the proper words, and in this way they could understand that he was extremely learned, a very cultured person. And Hanuman then introduced himself as the minister of Sugriva. Then Lakshman introduced Lord Ramachandra. And Lakshman introduced Lord Ramachandra as the crown prince in the Raghu dynasty, and so on. And then he introduced himself, and instead of saying, "I'm his brother," his younger brother, which would have made him share in the glories, he said, "And I'm his servant." So that was showing the mood of Lakshman, a mood of humility, a mood of being a servant, and throughout being the servant of his elder brother, Lord Ramachandra. So, looking at these personalities, another personality who is interesting is Bali. Bali is very interesting. There were these two brothers, Bali and Sugriva, and they were also from celestial origin, but also monkeys, all by the arrangements of the appearance of the Supreme Lord. After all, Ravana had received benedictions that he could not be killed by anyone but a human, because he didn't bother to ask to be protected from humans. So he could be killed by a human being and defeated. So he was defeated by a combination of human beings and an army of monkeys. Well, so all these heroes, celestial heroes, appeared within the monkey dynasty. So Bali and Sugriva were brothers, and both were very powerful, but of the two, Bali was by far the most powerful. It is said that even before the whole kidnapping, etc., when Ravana was still roaming the skies and arresting the world, that Bali had already had a fight with Ravana. And he had easily defeated Ravana and caught him in his tail and kept him there for quite a while, but eventually they made a pact. And so then, okay, he let him go. Anyway, so Bali and Sugriva, Bali was the elder brother, so he was meant to rule a particular kingdom. Then what happened was that once there was a powerful demon, and both the brothers were following this demon, who went into a cave, and Bali went after him into the cave, and he told Sugriva, he said, "Look, you know, if I don't come out of this cave, right, after a certain amount of time, consider me dead, then you put a big rock in front of the cave so this demon cannot come out." Right? So the time passed, and not only that, there was a great cry of help with the voice of Bali. So it really looked that Bali was had lost the battle, and Sugriva put the rock. However, it turned out the demon had died, but before dying, imitated the voice of Bali and played one of those typical Rakshasa tricks, which confused Sugriva. Then Sugriva, who had come back, you know, had been approached by the wife of his brother for shelter. Yeah. So, all right, he accepted her to do. She needed to, in the monkey world, these things are going on. He accepted her, and then, you know, but then later Bali came back and then accused him, "You just, you know, wanted to take over the throne, you purposely, you wanted to steal my wife, you purposely locked me into that cave, and for this, you know, I will punish you." Now, there was a place where Bali was not able to go because he was cursed. So, basically, Sugriva started hiding there. And every day, at one point in the day, Bali would fly through the sky with a huge jump and land with one foot on the head of Sugriva and give him like a big kick, and then jump fly off to the other side, and then just land just outside that particular land which he could not touch. So Griva had a lot of headache. Yeah, that was the issue. So anyway, through Hanuman was the minister of Sugriva. Through Hanuman, a pact was made with Lord Ramachandra, and then Lord Ramachandra agrees to help Sugriva if Sugriva agrees to help him. And that's the deal. Sugriva sends his monkeys everywhere to the south to find Sita, and meanwhile, Ramachandra is helping Sugriva. And in that particular instance, what took place is kind of surprising for one who is supposed to be the embodiment of Dharma. Because what did Ramachandra do? Ramachandra was hiding behind a tree. And from behind that tree, when Bali came flying in to kick Sugriva, like he did every day, then suddenly Ramachandra shot an arrow from behind the tree, from an ambush, and he just shot Bali. And Bali fell on the ground and was lying there and was dying. And Bali said to him, he said, "How could you act like this in such a cowardly way? Why didn't you face me in battle? If you're such a hero, how could you act like such a coward?" And here is this the moment in the Ramayana where Lord Ramachandra kind of overstepped the principles of Dharma. Is this the moment? It looks like it. It sure does. I mean, shooting someone in the back from an ambush, it's pretty, even these days, it's considered low. Now we're in Kali Yuga. And then Lord Ramachandra began to speak and he said, "No, Bali, understand my position and understand your position. See who you are," said. "If you would have been a Kshatriya, oh yes, then it would have been appropriate for me to come out and face you in battle, like in front." He said, "But you are not a Kshatriya. You are a wild animal. And you have not followed any principles of Dharma. You have tortured your brother. You have behaved like an animal. And therefore, I have treated you like an animal, like a wild animal. And as Kshatriyas are hunting in the forest and going hiding, I shot you in that way, exactly according to the principles of Kshatriya Dharma." And Bali finally understood it, actually. He understood, "I behaved like an animal. I deserve to die like an animal." And then Bali was in peace that he was dying in that way. So that's an interesting element in the whole Ramayana. Well, there are so many elements. So this whole point that Lord Ramachandra is following Dharma throughout, always religious duty, whether it is favorable for himself or not, he's following it. He went to the forest when Kaikeyi asked, no problem. The whole palace was crying, he was smiling. But the worst part of Lord Ramachandra adhering to Dharma comes towards the end of the Ramayana, which is really not a book with a happy end, to say it like that. It's just too much, the end of the Ramayana. Because after the whole battle at Lanka, which is a terrible battle, a terrible, terrible, terrible battle. And after that whole battle, then finally Sita is regained and brought before Lord Ramachandra. And what happens is, he says, so you are free now, you can go. And everyone is looking like, what happened? Has he lost it? Has he gone mad? What happened now? And Sita also. And then it comes out, she spent the night in the house of another man. He cannot take her back. And then she proves her innocence. She just speaks out and says, look, if I am in any way contaminated, right, then I will now enter a fire. And if I am in any way acted inappropriately, then let this fire burn me. But if I have not compromised my chastity, then let me come out of this fire unharmed. So anyway, Sita comes out unharmed. There's a further story behind all that as well, which we'll save for Sunday. And then what happens is that so there Ram accepts her. He's convinced she's pure. And everyone is convinced she's pure, and everyone's very happy. They go in a celestial plane towards Ayodhya, big celebration, etc. And Ram Vijay lights in the whole city, everyone very happy. But as kings used to do, he once went in common man's clothes, in disguise, hiding amongst the people to find out what is going on amongst the people. And he just happened to come across this this barber, this low-class man who had an argument with his wife and said, you're not coming back in. You're not coming back in. You spent the night in another man's house. You're not coming back in. I am not like Ramachandra. And at that point, and Lord Ramachandra heard that, his heart broke into a million pieces or more, because he understood that I cannot keep Sita. I have to send her away. Because if I give any room for the citizens to interpret my life as a life of adharma, that there is a trace of adharma, of irreligion in my life, then I am giving a license to others to also go that way. Therefore, for the sake of upholding dharma, he told Sita to go. Sita was pregnant at that time and had two sons in the ashram of Valmiki, and the whole thing, Valmiki taught the sons the Ramayana, love, and Kush, who later went around and eventually came to the kingdom of Ram, who lived in great separation. And then, eventually, these boys were describing the whole stories of Ram, and eventually, Lord Ramachandra understood who they were and was ready to take Sita back. At that stage, but Sita had enough. She couldn't take it anymore. So she just disappeared into a crack in the earth. It's too much. So this dharma, sometimes, a couple of times on Ram Navamis, I've spoken about the all-devouring dharma. Yeah. It's all-devouring, this dharma. Yeah. Just dharma above everything. And we can see that ultimately it doesn't satisfy the heart. Yeah. Ultimately, dharma above everything. When dharma is regulating material activities, yes, yes, yes. But when dharma interferes with the with uniting with the Supreme Lord. No, no, no. Out with Dharma. We don't want Dharma. Okay? We'll transcend Dharma a million times. Okay? We'll break all the rules. Yes. Oh, my dear gopis, what are young girls like you doing so late at night in the forest? Have you lost the way? Or are you collecting flowers for your puja? This is not a time to collect flowers in the night. If you'd better go home quickly. Your elders, your relatives must be in great anxiety. And it's like in this way, Krishna is speaking, and it's like they're looking at him incredulously. They said, "You're not serious." That was the first reaction. It cannot be. You're joking. Yeah. But Krishna kept on speaking in this way, no? And until, you know, they didn't know what to do anymore, and they just got into anxiety and started to scratch the ground with their toenails. But one thing was very sure. Although the gopis got confused, although the gopis got in anxiety, one thing was very, very sure. Not for a moment were they considering going back. No way. But your whole reputation will be destroyed. Who cares? Reputation? What's the use of any reputation? But you cannot go back to your family home. Who wants to go back to such a home? Nah, we couldn't care less about these things. We want only Krishna. So we see in the example of the gopis that they transcended Dharma. And in that way, the followers of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu are worshipping Lord Ramachandra, are praying to Lord Ramachandra, and yet, right, yet reserve their dedication for Lord Krishna. Because ultimately this Dharma is limiting the full expression of love, you see. How could Ram give up Sita? No. So, the Gaudiya Vaishnavas, the followers of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, are therefore spending one day a year on Ram Navami, absorbing themselves in the pastimes of Lord Ramachandra, worshipping Lord Ramachandra, praying to Lord Ramachandra wholeheartedly. And they know they need it. They know they need this Dharma. They know that everyone needs that reinforcement of the example of Lord Ramachandra. Seeing his perfect example, how could we not? Therefore, remembering Lord Ramachandra is essential because it anchors us in Dharma, which is an area where we are very weak in this age. So we need to take shelter of Lord Ramachandra. And yet, in our theological understanding, our understanding of the nature of of the eternal pastimes of the Lord, Krishna and the gopis in Vrindavan, we also realize that we go beyond the Dharma of Lord Ramachandra. So in that way, we are celebrating this Ram Navami, glorifying Ram Raja, the rule of Lord Ram, when a kingdom of Dharma came upon earth. But also appreciating that in the spiritual world, it is not Dharma that rules, but it is simply the pleasure of Krishna and nothing else. It is Ras. It is whatever is pleasing Krishna. That is our Dharma. Gaudiya Vaishnavas, though, are generally following principles of Dharma, because Dharma is naturally pleasing to Krishna. But sometimes Krishna himself cannot be confined by such Dharma. So for ourselves, we are following the principles of Dharma. But Krishna cannot be confined by such Dharma. And when for the pleasure of Krishna, it may be necessary to not adhere to rules of Dharma, then a Gaudiya Vaishnava will be ready to break the rules of Dharma. As we see Krishna did himself, when he had given his word, he would not fight in the battle of Kurukshetra. He broke that word. He broke it under the pressure of Bhishmadeva. He broke it. And Krishna showed that ultimately love between the Supreme Lord and his devotee stands above Dharma. Because Dharma is about duty, worshipping the Lord out of duty. But greater than worshipping the Lord out of duty is worshipping the Lord out of love. And that is what Krishna is showing in his pastimes. So any questions, any comments? Tapas.
Can you draw any parallels between Ram's Van Sita and Krishna living in Brahman and Lord Chaitanya taking sannyas?
Can we draw any parallels? Well, one can certainly see that that Lord Chaitanya's sannyas is also externally, at least, a manifestation of Dharma. Sannyas is a Dharma, right? Sannyas Dharma. It is, that's why many devotees of Lord Chaitanya were just abhorred, you know, when he took sannyas, because they felt like the Supreme Lord doesn't need to take sannyas. Why is he taking sannyas? Why is he cutting his hair? His beautiful transcendental hair. Why is he cutting when there is no need to do so? He's transcendental. He's the Supreme Lord. Why should he limit himself through tapasya? Right? He should manifest his full glory. So people were shocked. And the barber who shaved his head, I mean, after that he never shaved again. He became a sweet maker. And he couldn't shave anymore. And the hair of Lord Chaitanya was kept in a samadhi. And next to it was the samadhi of the barber. I guess they waited till he naturally died. But since he was a sweet maker for a while. This is the fact that the sannyas is also dharma in that sense. Of course, sannyas is a very interesting feature of Dharma. And that comes out in the Chaitanya Mangalam from Lochan Das Thakur, who says that there's this whole discussion going on between Mother Sachi and Nimai, who's about to leave. And she blocks him. And she's confronting him. And he's admitting he's going to take sannyas, and she starts to argue. And she presents many arguments. And he argues back, and she argues back, and it goes back and forth. Until finally he says, "Mother, is it true? Is it true that at one point a son must leave home and go into the world to make a fortune and bring that back to his aging parents?" He said, "Yes, that is true." He said, then I want to leave home and take sannyas so that I can get the treasure of Krishna praying, and then I'll bring it back to you. So it's interesting, in the Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Lochan Das gives an internal reason for the sannyas, which is to get Krishna praying, or which is to liberate himself completely from anything and everything that might be in the way for obtaining Krishna praying. So sannyas is interesting like that. Sannyas dharma is a dharma which is directly linked to transcendence. And of course, one can say, but he didn't need to do that, because he's the Supreme Lord. The praying was naturally there, was already there. Nimai already showed that praying immediately, as soon as he revealed his identity as a devotee. When he came back from Gaia, there was already symptoms of praying in him, all throughout. So what do you have to take sannyas for? So sannyas was, yes, adhering to dharma. So you can draw a parallel there. Yes. And therefore it is also mentioned that in the relationship to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, although Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is teaching the five rasas in relation to Krishna, in relation to him, there is only one rasa. Yeah? Only one. Awe and reverence. Yeah? It's only that mood of awe and reverence. Yes? And servitorship. And nothing else. Mm-hmm. There's no conjugal rasa with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. The conjugal mood, the sakya rasa, it's all directed to his Krishna. The five rasas are with Krishna. With Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, only one servitorship. And that's very interesting. It's an interesting protection mechanism built in for this age of Kali. And so we just simply turn to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and remain in that mood of servitorship, and then automatically, our relationship with Krishna will also manifest, but always from the platform of a servant of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu.
In the Bhagavad Gita, thank you for coming, Maharaj. This is a breath of fresh air. I think the last traveling sannyasi who came here to Korshanis, aside from Smita Krishna Swami once or twice this long, dark Swedish winter, I think it was you. Was it not?
Yeah.
I think so.
Yeah.
In the Bhagavad Gita, it said that the Kshatriya Dharma is heroism, power, determination, resourcefulness, courage in battle, generosity, leadership. So how could Ramachandra defeat, or, argue with dying Bali, that the Kshatriya could go to the forest and hide?
Mm-hmm.
I don't follow.
Why? Because that's Kshatriya Dharma. He pointed out that Bali was not a Kshatriya. He was an animal. He's a wild animal. And the Kshatriyas, they didn't have to fight with wild animals according to the same codes as they were fighting with other Kshatriyas. So because Bali was, A, he was a monkey, B, he was behaving like an animal. Lord Ramachandra pointed out to him not only that he was an animal by birth, but he pointed out, you've behaved like an animal. Yes? Therefore, I'll treat you like an animal. That was the point. And animals, they were not faced by, in that way. Yeah? Bare hands, when an opponent, a Kshatriya opponent, drops his weapon, then one is also supposed to throw his weapon and fight barehanded. Yeah? So when the chariot breaks, then one should also get down from his chariot. It's like this, Kshatriya code. Give him an equal, give him a fair chance. No, not with violent enemies. Just shoot them from an ambush. That was all right. So Bali accepted that because Bali was conversant. But Bali first had to realize that he was an animal. But he admitted that at the end. So he died in peace. Yeah, this heroism, I was reading about it. Dhanavir and Yudhavir, that it consists, heroism consists of three aspects. Dhanavir, being charitable, Yudhavir, being very valiant and powerful in battle, and the most important, Dharmavir, being adhering to religious principles. That is true heroism. So Lord Ramachandra had that. The Dharmavir was always the predominant of the three. Because you can see Kshatriyas who were good at the Dhanavir and the Yudhavir, but a little weak on the Dharmavir, like Karna, for example. Very good in the first two, a little weak on the... So he had all these three. So he's a true, a real hero.
So now in the Kali Yuga, this principle that, you know, the killing the aggressors, is it, how
no.
Does it now?
Killing aggressors is not only in Kali Yuga. Killing aggressors was always permissible. And there's six aggressors mentioned. Let me see if I can remember all six. One who attacks with a deadly weapon, one who sets fire to the house, one who administers poison, one who steals your wife, one who steals your riches, one who steals your land. That's six. I've got them. One may kill them, and there is no karmic reaction. However, there may be a reaction of the state, and they may, you know, if someone takes your wife, which is very common these days, and you kill them, you'll probably go to jail for a considerable amount of time. Therefore, we say, although this point is there, don't do it. Don't do it, because it is not favorable for Krishna. It is not favorable for the service of Krishna. See, it's a rule of Dharma. It is a rule of Dharma that if someone steals your wife, that you may kill that person without getting any karma. However, because it will reflect bad on Krishna, and that Krishna's devotees would be doing so, therefore it's not anukul, it's not favorable for the service of Krishna. So therefore cannot be done. So sorry, if anyone takes your wife, you can't kill that person, all right?
I'm sorry, for example.
I'll say it again. You cannot kill that person. I'm just making sure. It's clear that you don't say Kadambakana, as well as say. Please. Go ahead.
Yeah, for example, on the street, I walk in the street and someone, you know, attacks some, you know, old lady.
Yeah.
So I can just, you know, okay, it's not good for me, for my spiritual life, then just ignoring.
Yeah, you can protect the old lady, but you don't have to kill the guy. You know,
but
what I mean?
If he wants to kill me.
If someone wants to kill you and he's seriously in the process of doing so, then you have a right to defend yourself. So if someone pulls a gun on you, okay, if in the process of a fight like that, you kill him first, that's permissible and even understandable in a court of law. However, if it's not necessary to kill him, if you can disarm him without without killing him, right, then that's enough. You know? Not from like, well, okay, you know, he tried to kill me, now I'll screw his head off as well. No, that's not, if it's not necessary in self-defense, then don't kill. How about this?
Interesting, the principle is same for the Kali Yuga.
What?
If it's same as Kali Yuga, that this principle, you know, killing the aggressors, etc.
Well, I'm explaining it, isn't it? I'm explaining it. So it's not the same for Kali Yuga. Because we are not having the same level of Dharma in our nature. So we should understand. So easy, some revenge, some element of revenge coming. Oh, he tried to kill me. All right, now I'll kill him. No, in self-defense, when the person in the middle of the attack, all right, you know, it's a big fight, and somehow or other, you know, he came with a knife, and somehow or other, on the first floor, you managed to push him out of the window. Survived. Call the police. And that's all right. But not like, I got the knife out of his hand, and I defeated him. Now, the rat tried to kill me. Now I'll throw him out of the window. No. Then you'll go to jail, and if you do it in America, you get the electric chair. Or maybe. So therefore, better avoid this killing as much as possible. Avoid it. Avoid killing at all costs. Vaishnavas are not interested in killing. They're interested in killing a demoniac mentality. You know? Anybody can chant Hare Krishna and become transformed. So, Jagannath Madai were not killed. They were given a chance to reform. Therefore, in this age of Kali, which is the age where the mercy of Mahaprabhu is there, it's not our business to go around killing. Our business is to give out the mercy. Even in self-defense, we avoid it. It cannot be avoided what to do. Then it can be.
I understand. And then this, for example, these criminals, the king, he killed them personally, and they become, was good for them because they become free from their actions.
That was the king. That was the king. King was not an ordinary man. We are not kings.
So this principle is not a club?
No, that was for the king. The king is not an ordinary man. Where are such kings? No.
Maharaj, I was thinking about how you described that dharma is inferior to bhakti, and I was thinking, what is the difference between sanatan dharma and dharma?
Sanatan dharma and dharma. Well, there is a description in the scripture that there are activities of dharma which are trigunya, which are in the three modes of material nature. Then sanatana dharma is activity which is aiming at the constitutional eternal position of the living being, ultimately being devotional service. So that's another matter. That is fine. But when we speak about dharma, the four goals of life that are within the three modes of material nature, that kind of dharma is aimed at bringing us to the mode of goodness. The mode of goodness is important and parallel to transcendence. So we are following dharma in so many ways, and are meant to follow it. Many devotees are too transcendental to dharma. Yeah? They lie as if, you know, big deal, you know what I mean? This mundane morality and all this. So since we come from adharma, we should really practice and cultivate some dharma. But we should also see that dharma has its limitations when it comes to the pleasure of Krishna. But not that we on our own are going to decide, well, this dharma not important, that dharma not important for the pleasure of Krishna. No, a first principle is we must take the blessings for everything we do. First principle of Sanatana Dharma is that one is never independent. Adho Guru Pada Sraya. So first one must bow down, take shelter of the feet of the Vaishnavas, not of one guru, but of the principle of guru tattva, or of superiors. Therefore, you know, breaking dharma, bending dharma, and all such things are not done, right, without consulting a superior. And if that's not possible, well, then what to do? Right? What to do? You know, there's always the question, what if there's a shipwreck and you are like, you know, out in a little boat at sea, and now what are you going to do? Are you going to eat fish at one point in time or not? And the fish is just washed by the wave on the deck of the ship, The Life of Pi, or something like that. That is a movie which shows some sort of situation like that. A devotee of Vishnu is finding himself in a lifeboat with a tiger. Anyway, so I'll stir it up. But he comes to the question of eating fish or not. He eats it. So maybe there is a time when we have no one to consult. Yeah, that could happen. But ordinarily, you always consult. Always consult. So therefore, Sanatana Dharma and Dharma are, in most cases, parallel. Parallel. Because our basis is the mode of goodness. And from there we serve in transcendence. But our foundation is in goodness. And then for transcendental reasons it may be broken. But who will determine? It's a big thing to break down. Big thing. Better get blessings. First principle of Dharma. Get blessings.
I've been thinking in Krishna book, the character of Krishna, basically he breaks all the rules, what is not allowed, like he steals even clothes of the gopis, he kills
according to the rules.
He breaks all the rules, and that's why actually he's also really attractive.
He doesn't break all the rules, he breaks some rules. There's also Krishna's daily activities in the Krishna book where Krishna follows all the rules.
Yeah.
You know, sets examples of Dharma. So you see both in Krishna. Krishna's following the principles of Dharma, but then he's also breaking rules.
So how...
And that's attractive.
Yeah. So how you... understand it, or how you...
I don't understand it at all, but he's doing it. It blows my mind. What Krishna is doing, it just blows my mind again and again. How can he act like that? But he does. That's the amazing thing. He's an amazing personality. And it's attractive.
Yes, it is. How will you avoid to just judge
How can I? I'm just an insignificant little, you know, praying to become an atom at his lotus feet. How can I judge Krishna? How do I avoid that? Yeah, you know, it's a tough question because I'm proud like anything, so it's hard to avoid. But so far, by regularly staying in contact with Prabhupada's books, I get a good sense to sort of like hold my mind tight. Otherwise my mind will get judgmental like anything all the time. And then start judging Krishna as well.
How about these kind of feelings, like before I was devotee, or still I get angry to Krishna about, like, she stole the clothes of gopis in this pastime. Is it like a natural feeling, like, or is
anger towards Krishna?
Yeah, I know. Like, how he could do that, such a rascal, or in this, you know, like, sometimes pastimes also evade this kind of emotion.
Well, therefore we must look at such pastimes with the help of the liberated souls, the acharyas. And that's why we must read some explanations from the acharyas. Prabhupada gave explanations, and then we have Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur, Sanatana Goswami, Jiva Goswami, so many explanations we have, and we should read those. Because then we understand better. And then we can see it. Instead of small minded, see, our tendency is to be small minded and to see like reality, like for, with a very small lens. But the acharyas, they see very broad minded. And they see so many factors, you know, so many factors that are coming into play in the whole situation that we overlook. We just think he's stealing the clothes. We don't see the gopis that pray to Katyayani because they wanted to get married to Krishna. So he's only accepting their desire and marrying them in this way. So, but you need some help from the acharyas to see that. Otherwise, you see how can he steal the clothes? So, with the help of the acharyas. Okay, we stop. Thank you very much.